welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM. My name is Eddie Lesher, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guest for this week. We come to you live every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at WPVMFM.org. This program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery, discussing topics such as addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, and personal transformation, as we take an in-depth and informative look into approaches that can be integrated into daily life. All our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction recovery and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, our website is amindfulemergence.com. And with that, I want to welcome our listeners into A Mindful Emergence and also welcome my co-host, Margaret Kirshner.
Hi, good to be here.
As always, and thank you for being in the co-pilot seat virtually every week. And at this point, I also want to welcome our guests into the studio. And we're very fortunate to have three beautiful women from MAHEC. And they're involved with Project CARA. CARA stands for Care That Advocates Respect, Resiliency, and Recovery for All. And this is about supporting moms expecting recovery in pregnancy with MAHEC. Let's give us an idea what we're going to be focusing on this week, Marie.
Thanks for having us. We wanted to come and share with everyone what Project CARA is at MAHEC. It's a collaborative, integrative approach at looking at perinatal substance use. And so if you have been in recovery for 5 years or want to get into recovery and are struggling with active use, then we are there to support these women through their OB care and get them into whatever substance use recovery looks like for them in a non-judgmental way across all of Western region of North Carolina, so not just Buncombe County.
So how many counties do you serve?
18 counties currently. Yeah.
So you have your hands full.
Yes. We are expecting, between January and August of this year, we saw 187 women, and we expect to double that next year. And
absolutely. So, Marie, you are a licensed clinical addiction specialist and a professional counselor, and you're also a clinical supervisor. So, you supervise people in training as well.
Correct.
You have more than 15 years' experience working with patients of all ages with substance use disorders. And you're the integrated care director for OBGYN patients with substance use disorders. And you help connect patients with area substance use services and support organizations. And you're a co-founder of Project CARA.
I am.
You are. And I understand that every hour in the U.S., a baby is born that is dependent on opioids. So, Mel, I'm going to direct this question to you. And Mel is a family nurse practitioner. You have more than 20 years' experience working with high-risk pregnancies and mental health and substance use challenges. So does this statistic surprise you at all? Every hour, baby born dependent on opioids?
Yeah, well, it does and it doesn't. It's tough, and we really appreciate being here because it's quick in the middle of the opioid epidemic, I think, to look at the statistics on the babies and how they can be a little misleading. Certainly, what we try to target is the mother-baby dyad, and certainly during pregnancy, that focuses on the mom. And what we try to advocate for in our program is that healthy moms make healthy babies. And so when we keep that focus, it is true, about 50% of the time, any woman who is opioid dependent, who would be on medication-assisted therapy like methadone or buprenorphine, their child born does have a 50-50 chance of having some neonatal abstinence syndrome or withdrawal. However, that can look very different. I think the media often portrays that as the most severe forms, which is actually rare. And so we like to prepare our women that the babies may need additional support. However, I want you to know that when moms are healthy, babies are healthy.
Yeah. And this addiction crosses all different social spectrums, right, Denise? And Denise Wieger is another one of our guests. You're a licensed clinical addiction specialist as well. You've been working for over 20 years specializing with prenatal women and mothers struggling with substance use disorders. So I forgot the question I just asked you.
Well, but you didn't, I bet.
No. You know, working with pregnant moms as long as I have, first I want to tell you from the bottom of my heart what an absolute privilege, that honor it has been to have been on this recovery journey with so many women. And I want to tell you what's really important is every single mom who I've ever worked with wants to have a healthy baby, and they love these babies. And so what happens is that pregnant moms show up, and, you know, people coming into recovery, sometimes, you know, they go through this process of getting ready and seeking help and asking for help. These are pregnant moms who all of a sudden find themselves pregnant, and maybe they weren't quite ready yet to actually be in recovery. So they have further to go to be able to kind of organically get to that place where they're ready for recovery. And so I always say they take a little special TLC to feel safe. You can imagine how stigmatizing and how hard it is when you're pregnant to say, look, I'm doing something that I'm really scared might hurt my baby, or maybe somebody's going to show up after I have the baby and they're going to take my baby away. The amount of trust and safety that takes to be able to open up at that pivotal moment when they're pregnant. So we have to cocoon these women with the ability to help them feel safe to say, we're going to help you. We're going to partner with you. We're going to have your back here and make sure that we can get to that best outcome because you want that healthy baby more than anything else, and we want to help you get there.
You've set up a great picture of, you know, how a woman might show up needing your assistance. So how are the needs of pregnant moms with substance use disorder different from women in general with substance use disorder?
Well, again, like we said, pregnant women don't necessarily say, I'm ready for treatment. Some of them don't even realize they have an issue with substance use disorders because they've been prescribed maybe opiates along the way. And then somewhere, especially particularly for women, I'll tell you, there's a huge overlap between physical pain and emotional and spiritual pain. They might be medicating a history of trauma. They might be medicating early childhood adversity and not even realize they're doing that. So sometimes this is their first foray into even hearing that this substance use disorder could be related to a history of trauma. And they're getting this all sprung while at the same time they might be pregnant for the first time and they're having, you know, pap smears done and 50 million people around them asking questions about a pregnancy. You can imagine how overwhelming this is to the central nervous system, and really working with these women and helping prepare their bodies to feel safe enough to be able to say, hey, maybe there is an issue right here. Maybe these women who are around me do want to help me figure out a path to having a safe and healthy pregnancy. And every woman wants to go in and have her baby and have it be a miraculous birth experience. These women are no exception. And the media portrays these women as though they don't care about their babies. What I can tell you unequivocally, every single one of us in this room can tell you that these women love these babies. They may not know quite how to get there. Many of our women have generational patternings where they were lost to the system. They were in DSS. If you've ever sat with one of these women and you realize when you realize they sit with you, and I get teary when I say this, and they tell you, I have no emergency contact. My dad died when I was 10 from an overdose, and my mom killed herself 2 years later.
No wonder they have trauma.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, it's so important to know that these women have these incredible stories and not to judge them until you walk, you know, the phrase that says walk a mile in their footsteps and realize these histories of trauma really inform the substance use. The substance use We like to say this, the substance use isn't the problem. It was a strategy to deal with a problem that isn't working out very well. And we have to give them the ability to learn how to deal with this stuff in a healthier, more nurturing, loving, kind way.
Oh, I can hear your passion and I can see it in your eyes. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for really telling us and showing us so wonderfully how that feels and looks. So why is it really important for women to receive timely mental health support during their pregnancy? And how does the OB facilitate that woman getting the help she needs during her pregnancy?
That's a great question, Margaret. Women are never at a higher risk for relapse than they are during pregnancy. Because even the most desired planned pregnancy is really stressful. And in the United States, 49% of pregnancies aren't planned. And with women with substance use disorders, it's probably even higher. And so it's really important that they get support or mental health treatment if they have any co-occurring mental health issues like anxiety or depression. A lot of these women have a history from previous deliveries of postpartum anxiety or depression. And so in order for them to have the healthiest, most stable pregnancy possible, they need that mental health care early. So we are really fortunate with Project Cara and at MAHEC OB to have therapists in the OB office that can see the patients during OB appointments. And we're lucky that with Project Cara and our substance use clinic, we have Denise in our office to be able to see these patients, get engaged with them, and then she's able to actually go out and see them in their homes and offer them support and mental health treatment in their home community.
Yeah, and Denise, you are the director of the Prenatal Health Partners and co-director of Insight Women's Recovery Center. And this is a gender-specific treatment center offering a trauma-informed approach for women. And this ties right in to everything else. It's all the other work that you're doing, yeah?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, what Marie said is absolutely correct. The lifetime risk for mental illness throughout a anybody's lifespan hovers around 5%. When you get into pregnancy in the first year postpartum, for a woman, that jumps to 20%. The hormonal shifts, the stresses, the lack of sleep, the convergence of all those factors for women, the suicide rate for women is the highest the first year postpartum. So you add to that then struggling on top of that, the history of struggling with the history of trauma, and then on top of that, the substance use disorder. You know, of course, we need support the most at that point.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on the new WPVM LP in Asheville, 103.7 on your dial, and streaming globally at WPVMFM.org. And Margaret and I are joined in the studio this week by Marie Gannon, Mel Ramage, and Denise Wegar from MAHEC, talking about Project Cara, supporting moms expecting recovery in pregnancy. So the term coexisting disorder, I believe, was used. For our listeners who don't understand, may not have encountered that term, explain what that is. And do you have a psychologist or psychiatrist on staff to prescribe medication if that's needed?
Great question. So a co-occurring disorder is when someone, pregnant or not, has both a substance use disorder and a mental health issue or mental illness. For example, PTSD is a very common one that we see with substance use disorders. And we at MAHEC are starting a psychiatry residency, so we will have psychiatrists soon. What we currently have are nurse practitioners with training in treating psychiatric conditions, and the majority of our OBGYNs and nurse practitioners, midwives, residents are also comfortable treating the most common psychiatric conditions. And then at Women's Recovery Center, who we partner with, they have a psychiatrist on staff who our women can also go and see once they get established in therapy.
Margaret, you asked a really great question about what does that mean for these pregnant women and how does that look? And I think something that's really helpful to share about our program that's unique is that pregnant women who are struggling with substance use disorders have different barriers to care than women who are not pregnant. So let me give you a classic example of someone who's doing really well. And so let's say it's someone who has opioid use disorder. It is not her first pregnancy. Maybe it's her second or third. She has two kids at home that she is caring for, and that she wants to be active in her recovery. And so maybe that includes methadone and then maybe some groups. And so that would mean getting up at, 5 a.m. to make it to the methadone clinic, and then certainly getting back home to be able to get her kids ready to school. And then once the kids are ready to school, getting them to school and then getting to her job and then getting the kids after school and then wanting to make a meeting that night. Obviously I'm selling it a lot of what an incredible journey these women have to go through in each day. And so one of the targets of our program is certainly to reduce some of those barriers. So when they come in for an obstetric care visit during Project Caro, what happens is Marie not only can do a mental health and substance use assessment, do on-site, brief intervention, referral to treatment. That may be Denise, who is in our clinic co-located with us, and able to go in and meet that client right then and there. So we don't wait, say, well, here's this great woman, Denise. I think you should give her a call, right? We don't add one more thing to her plate. She gets to meet Denise that day. We partner with ADAC, JFK ADAC, which is our detox and inpatient. And if that is something that might be best for that woman, they are there in our clinic. And if they're not there that day, they're on call for us to be able to make that warm handoff as opposed to saying, we're going to send you to this place. No, I want you to talk to Lisa or Aaron and understand what it is their program is about. And certainly, our other partners, Mission Hospital, is with Tammy Cody, who is our substance exposure educator. So when a woman's getting ready to deliver, we're not going to say, hey, why don't you just call Mission and find out what that's going to look like. Tammy meets them during their obstetrical visit to be able to prepare them for what that will look like when they deliver and what other agencies will be there to talk to them. Denise often is an advocate to, these women come knowing that DSS may be involved, and how can we flip that? How can we actually say, you're right, DSS might be involved, so let's talk about what that would look like and what we can do to prepare for that if that's the case. And then certainly we have buprenorphine prescribers for those women who would be buprenorphine candidates for opioid use disorder, that they are able to get that there as well.
Yeah, just to explain a little bit what that means. That's Suboxone?
Correct.
Yeah.
And why a woman would not just go cold turkey off of the substances? Why would she go on those other medications?
Absolutely. So Marie had mentioned earlier that the risk of relapse is higher in pregnancy than any other time in a woman's life. Obviously, the risk of relapse not only is potentially domestic violence or a threatening scenario for the woman during relapse, but certainly risk for infection, HIV, hepatitis C, and we know that those things are more worrisome during pregnancy. So we have two national boards that guide what we do, the American Society of Addiction Medicine and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Both agree that if a woman has an opioid use disorder, that she is not currently stable in an abstinence-based recovery, then opioid replacement is the evidence-based practice that is recommended.
And are you partnering with any medication-assisted treatment facilities in particular, or?
So we try to have a relationship actually with all of them, because the goal is to find the best care for that woman. And because we serve multiple counties, obviously for some women coming all the way to get buprenorphine from us at Mahek OB is not the best fit. For some it may be, because she can have it during her obstetrical visit. Some women aren't buprenorphine candidates and they need to be on methadone. So certainly using our partners with methadone clinics here in the community is vital for those women, and having that partnership is really important.
And often what we're up against too is the stigma in the history of people seeing that, saying that, this is just a drug of substitution. You're still using drugs.
And so what we know is that this is a medication that stabilizes things for these women throughout their pregnancy. These are women who are facing things like, you know, endocarditis and bacterial infections, and it's not unusual. Most of the women we treat have had to be revived with Narcan. And don't bat an eye, have been sexually assaulted while they're using. So this drug is life-saving. This allows them to get up, participate in life, and to not have to be worried about whether they're going to end up in the emergency department.
Yeah, there is stigma, of course, associated with addiction. Mm-hmm. And then there's the additional stigma that you pointed out earlier. It's like, oh, wait a minute, you're a drug addict and you're pregnant. You don't care about your baby, which,
exactly,
of course, is absolutely false. And then there's stigma associated with medication-assisted treatment. And I will say, as a person who's been involved with 12-step recovery for a long time, some of that stigma comes from the rooms of 12-step recovery. And I think it's really unfortunate. So have you ever encountered women who've gone to a meeting, you know, a 12-step meeting, and then they've, you know, been browbeaten and about, oh, wait a minute, you're on methadone or Suboxone, you're not really in recovery. Do you ever bump up against that?
Yeah, absolutely. But the stigma is also within our field. Historically, you know, if you think back, I've been doing this for quite a while, and I have my own history of being in long-term recovery as well. So I can remember the days where, you know, if you wanted to get better, you got that sort of in your face. If you don't want this, you know, the confrontational approach. And so we come from this history of like, we're going to do this, you know, tough love, and we're going to tell you you're going to die, and we're going to tell you we're not going to be there for you. We're going to take away everything that's important to you, your relationships, your jobs, your connections. And we're going to say, this is all your fault because you have a medical disease called addiction. That's so important. And I'm going to say it again. This is a medical disease. There is a biological genetic vulnerability that comes with this. That's, again, unequivocal. And so even in this field, this is the silly part. You know, we can have somebody and say, hey, I want to send you to treatment. You send them to treatment. We're kicking you out because you test positive. Well, of course you're testing positive because you're trying to learn how to stop using drugs and you're struggling, right? So even in our own field, we don't know how to exactly work with this. And that's why, you know, that's why Project CARE came about, to say, look, we're done with this. You are going to come here and you are going to get a compassionate based approach. That doesn't mean we're going to enable you. It doesn't mean you're going to escape the consequences of this horrible disease any more than if you were diabetic and you eat Twinkies every day, multiple times a day, you may end up with a heart attack. I can't stop that. But I can say, if you come in here on Tuesdays to Project CARE, we're going to say, how can we help you? This disease doesn't care who it kills. But we are going to be here every step of the way, even if you fall, even if you struggle, even if your point of care cup comes up positive for heroin again today. We are partners with you on this journey because it is a chronic relapsing condition.
You will treat them with dignity.
Absolutely.
That is so key. And I'm so glad this Project CARE exists.
Me too.
I'm reading here... on this fact sheet, it says even a single episode of drug use during pregnancy can have a negative health outcome for a fetus. Can you talk about that, your perspective?
You know, when we look at substance use and what data is clearly correlated with poor fetal outcomes, I think one of the main things we don't talk about enough is alcohol use. And that continues to be an elusive thing, I think, for us in the medical field. So alcohol use is certainly linked to some birth defects, whereas the other substance uses are not. And I think that's important for us to talk about, because alcohol use is legal. And so it has a completely different social implication for talking about that and being able to support women with alcohol dependence during pregnancy.
Mm. And can I add one thing to that? This is really, really important. So when they look at neonatal abstinence syndrome and they look at, you know, babies having to learn how to manage an overactive nervous system because these medications are coming out of their systems, what they found is that if they could put these babies in a room with mom, and mom could be doing kangaroo care, skin-to-skin contact, soothing lights,
you know, just that mama baby dyad being supported, they could come close to eliminating that need for that medication to help that baby as they sort of learn how to work with that nervous system without that drug that they had been exposed to. And I say that because it's super important to know that those scared statistics don't often come with the statistics that say this mama-baby bond. There is nothing that is more powerful, more potent, that we have more research on in terms of long-term growing up without your mom being hugely negatively impactful. I would choose one exposure in utero over a lifetime of living without a mom. And I know that, and I'll share this personal experience for me, is growing up in a house with alcohol use disorder and with a lot of violence and trauma, as for me, as impactful was having a mom who had mental illness who left, who couldn't take it, who couldn't deal with being there because it was too traumatic for her. It brought up her own history of trauma. And so, you know, as I've talked with my mom about this, you know, over the years, what she said to me was, you know, Denise, I didn't have any support. I didn't know how to do any better. Nobody taught me how to do that. I felt so unsafe all the time. And so that's what Project CARE is trying to capture. It's saying, gosh, the statistics, people are going to scare you. They're going to say, the littlest addicts, look what they're doing in utero. But my question is, why aren't we helping these moms change their social situations? Why aren't we looking at the social determinants of health? Why aren't we providing support and help for these women so that they can do all those things to support that mama-baby dyad and change those long-term outcomes? We know decades of research, adverse child events are hugely linked. 40% increased risk of substance use disorders later on. That's where the problem is. The social problems are the childhood adversities that we're growing up with that are untreated, unmedicated, and supporting those really secure, loving, positive bonds between babies and their caregivers.
Oh, you're giving us so much good information. It makes so much sense. Just having mom and baby close, getting that oxytocin.
Absolutely.
Together. You mentioned neonatal abstinence syndrome. And can you say what that is, what that looks like?
Sure. Neonatal abstinence syndrome is essentially baby withdrawal. So when baby has been exposed to a substance in utero, Mel mentioned earlier that with opioids, whether it's heroin or methadone or buprenorphine, there's a 50-50 chance that baby will be born physically dependent to that medication. And so if they are born physically dependent, then what that means is that they are going to have the NAS, the neonatal abstinence syndrome, which is a spectrum from mild, where baby might have a little tremor, to the severe, which is what the media portrays. But I would say anecdotally what folks see the most is a tremor, and babies are hard to calm and comfort. They need to be held close to mom. They have a shrill cry. And the most important thing to know is that neonatal abstinence syndrome is not lethal, and we don't know of any long-term effects from it.
Well, I want to explore this more and so much more, and this is one of these shows where I almost hate to even pause and take a musical break. But I am, and it was very easy to pick out a tune this week because it just made so much sense to me. It's the classic Billie Holiday composition, God Bless the Child, in this particular case delivered by Gregory Porter.
Them that's got shall get, them that's not shall lose, so the Bible says, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Well, the strong, they get more, while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets don't ever make the grade. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own. That's got his own. Whoa, money, you've got lots of friends crowding round your door, but ooh, when you're gone and spending ends, they don't come round no more. Rich relations give crust of bread and such. You can help yourself, but ooh, don't you take too much. Well, now Mama may have, and oh, Papa, he may have, but God bless the child that's got his own. God bless the child that's got his own.
And there you have Gregory Porter. This is Eddie LeSheuron. From 7 to 8 p.m. every Monday on WPVM, Margaret Kirshner and I are joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in their effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. And we're so grateful to our guests that come in every week. This is program number 93. It's being broadcast live October 16th, I believe it is, 2017. And in addition to tuning in at 103.7 FM or streaming at WPVMFM.org Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m. or Thursday mornings for the rebroadcast 9 to 10 a.m., past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. So you can easily find them by going to our website, selecting the schedule at WPVMFM.org, and then just clicking on this program. It's listed Mondays at 7 p.m. All our shows are made possible by A Mindful Emergence, LLC, our Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, and one-on-one support for individuals living in recovery or wanting to experience recovery. We also offer trainings for CEU credits to healthcare professionals. You can access more information online at amindfulemergence.com. You can also find us on Facebook and LinkedIn. And if you want to contact our guests, we'll make sure you have a website here in a moment. But you can also reach them through me at discover@amindfulemergence.com. And a quick announcement on an event coming up this weekend that I think fits relates probably to our topic. There is the second Adverse Childhood Experiences Southeastern Summit happening at the Renaissance Hotel here in Asheville, The Art of Healing ACEs. So this is the 19th through the 21st, and attendees can gain tools and ideas for addressing ACEs and building resilience within their own communities. You can get information by going to www.mahec.net/ACES2017. And also, I want to mention, if you are enjoying this program, there's another show that you, in particular on WPVM, that you might want to check out. And that's Thursdays at 5 p.m. with McNair Ezard. He hosts A Better World, a show that looks at people and organizations that are working in areas such as hunger and poverty, economic and social justice, the environment, and spirituality. And he interviews people who are really making a difference, as are our three guests this week, and that is Denise Wegar. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Wegar.
Say it again.
Wegar.
Wegar. Okay. Mel Ramage and Marie Gannon, who are with Project Kara, which is supporting moms expecting recovery in pregnancy with MAHEC. And what exactly does MAHEC stand for?
That's Mountain Area Health and Education Center.
Just in case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We have a tendency sometimes to throw these acronyms and buzz terms around. We got to make sure that we explain what those are. So where exactly are you guys located? Let's start with you, Denise.
Insight Women's Recovery Center, we're located at 723 Fairview Road. That's Asheville, North Carolina, 28803.
And that's up by the library and the elementary school on Fairview.
Yeah, right
near
in
Exit
Oakley.
8.
Absolutely.
Exit 8. Right up the street from where we live.
All right. It's very convenient.
And then MAHEC, Marie?
MAHEC is 119 Hendersonville Road. So we are up the hill behind the DoubleTree Hotel and TGI Fridays.
Okay. And websites, one or more of them that we can offer our listeners?
I would say the easiest way to get in touch with us is just to Google Insight Human Services and Women's Recovery Center in Asheville, and you'll find us.
Okay. And what about you guys?
Project Kara, we have a website if you want to go to it. It is www.mahec.net/Kara.
C-A-R-A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have an event coming up that we should mention as well, Mel?
Yes, we are working with our colleagues in the state at the UNC Horizons program, and they will be coming to present their work on November 13th at MAHEC, and there'll be details on our webpage to follow.
Awesome. Okay. All right, so let's go back. We were talking about neonatal abstinence syndrome, and this is basically when a baby, the baby is withdrawing. Is it just opioids or other drugs as well, Marie?
Yeah, it's other drugs as well. Opioids is the substance that's getting all the media attention.
Right.
But essentially any chemical exposure that the fetus had could cause NAS.
Yeah, and of course that includes alcohol, which is mm-hmm. also a drug.
Can I give some history too?
Mel asked me to give this history, which
Please
is
do.
I've been doing this job long enough that so when I first started, we were actually housed at MAHEC. It was a grant started by two midwives of that practice. And the issue that they had was they were having issues with women who are pregnant who are exposed to cocaine. So anybody who's been around long enough remembers the crack babies.
Mm-hmm.
And that was huge. Again, you know, cyclical, right? With the drug of addiction might be different. So, I mean, what I want to remind people of is this has not been our first rodeo here with substances. And, you know, 20 years from now, it could be very well be something else, right? I mean, just a few years ago, it was K2 spice, bath salts, mm-hmm. you know. So
meth had a big run there for a
yeah.
while.
Yes. So, I mean, we don't like to sensationalize any of them. What we say is that it's just like the substance du jour right now. And mm-hmm. and what we know is that what pharmaceutical happened with pharmaceutical, you know, companies and what happened with practicing, you know, how doctors were practicing and how they were prescribing, what we got was a lot of access, right? A lot of these drugs became available. You didn't have to go into, you know, public housing to score some crack cocaine, right? But I can remember, I'm going to tell you that I can remember one of my clients saying that she was handcuffed to her bed when she delivered her baby who was cocaine exposed.
Ugh. Talk about trauma for the baby
yes.
and the mother, the whole family, everybody that's
yes.
there.
Right. And so we like to say, let's not let that bad part of history repeat itself by doing that again, by demonizing neonatal abstinence syndrome. It's a treatable condition, and our moms do really well working with care providers, medical doctors,
if they're weaned, then they have, you know, they have weaning protocols, but this is very treatable.
And when we talk about neonatal abstinence syndrome, opioids get all the press, and the substance that causes the most neonatal abstinence syndrome is nicotine.
I know, and my understanding is that's more addictive than heroin. Nicotine, I've heard that.
I've heard that too, anecdotally, from good friends who say they would much rather, you know, quit shooting heroin again over nicotine.
And that's no picnic.
Right.
I can tell you. I did it in a jail cell.
Right.
Yeah. But it was harder for me to quit cigarettes.
Right.
Eventually. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about some statistics here. I got this information from a site called Get the Facts. Are you familiar with that site?
It must be true. It says Get the Facts.
I know. Well, let's hope. It says here, research noted that 11.4% of non-pregnant females age 15 to 44 were current users of illicit drugs. In the same age group, 5.4% of pregnant females were current users. So it's about half, you know, pregnant women who are addicted is about half of the normal population. Does that sound, does those numbers register at all? Does that make sense?
That seems, we'll have to check the Get the Facts page, but that seems a little bit high. When we look at national rates of the disorder itself of having addiction, you're looking at about 10 to 12% of the population. Certainly right now, when we look at our statistics at MAHEC, the 10% actually matches right on. Mm-hmm. And I think what is important to know about addiction and pregnant women is that if we're looking that this is a disease that's about 10 to 12% of the population, we're looking at it from a medical model that is a chronic relapsing condition. We then actually put it with hypertension and diabetes and look longevity-wise, what are the relapse rates? And it's interesting when you look at it that way, the relapse rates in addiction are very similar to hypertension and diabetes, right? And isn't that an interesting way to look at that? So if I give you a case scenario about a woman who is addicted to a substance and how I would go about treating her, but then if I took those words out and said, oh no, she has diabetes, right? How that changes, how we look at how we would give her treatment, how we would forgive her relapse, and of course continue supporting her and getting her nutrition counseling and getting her medication assisted therapy in the form of insulin if she needed it. And so that's part of our goal at Project Cara as well, is we are doing this for all of our other women with other medical comorbidities like hypertension and diabetes. We want the same care for our women who have addiction as well.
They're both chronic illnesses.
Correct. And it's important to note though too that unmanaged blood sugar in pregnancy has outcomes too for the baby as well.
Without a doubt. Okay. Now, according to Get the Facts, the rate of addiction is lowest in the last trimester. It's lower in the third trimester than in the first two. They're shrugging their heads. Have you noticed this or are questioning it?
Well, I mean, certainly you can.
People
certainly
get recovery.
I mean, they get through the process of where they're getting recovery. But you can also imagine for a lot of the women I work with, they know that a drug screen might be coming, a toxicology thing. Here we do core toxicology, meconium testing. That's the first bowel movement that's passed. So you also see somebody like trying to kind of control and manage what the outcome is when they go in to have the baby. And again, I'm going to reiterate this. They all want a healthy birth outcome.
Yeah, yeah.
They strive through the whole pregnancy to do that. So there's also this process for all moms. You know, I'm a mom of three boys, and there's this process you go through of bonding in utero. And as that baby gets bigger and you start feeling the most amazing feeling of that baby kicking in your belly,
yeah,
you start talking to that baby by their name. You start dreaming and imagining and hoping. You're building that bond. And so that bond, even throughout the course of pregnancy, really changes like how you're working with that disorder, how you're working with your substance use disorder. So you would expect that too. That bond is growing.
Yeah, absolutely. So how rare is Project Cara? I mean, it's you're doing amazing work here. You said 18 counties you served. Did I get that right? 18? So
16, but it's close.
16, okay.
Marie got excited. We had two Rome counties added to it. It's okay.
All right. But, I mean, as you look around the country, yeah. Is this really kind of a pilot program? Is it really rare? I mean, how hard? I mean, this is really, really special, isn't it, what you're doing?
We would love to say that we were the original ideas, but like Denise alluded, this is a kind of programming that existed 20 years ago, and I think if we can take any gifts from the current opioid epidemic, this is one of them. How do we take this opportunity to really challenge it, how we look at this disease and how we treat it? I mentioned earlier we're partnering with Horizons, but other states also have great programs that we have followed their lead on. Vermont has a great program where they serve both community and rural community like we do here. And you know, Eddie, one of the things I wanted to share that I think is amazing about what Marie and Denise and all of our teammates at Project Cara do is we're looking at changing how medicine views this disease. If you think about the typical medical doctor and the training and the years of the training that they go through, do you know that most physicians graduate with 8 hours or less of addiction training?
Yeah.
And so how do we change that? How do we challenge that norm and say, no, this should have the same amount of training as diabetes and hypertension and really be able to change how we look at the healthcare workforce and be able to have trauma-informed care as part of a routine curriculum, right? Wouldn't that be amazing if, you know, we look at all of our medical providers from MA to physician 10 years from now and they know that this is just part of routine healthcare training as opposed to small groups. And that's one of our goals at Project Cara as well.
And we're also extending that education further than just, you know, our practicing medical doctors. The Department of Health and Human Services are showing up to the table. They have a new program. It's called START. They're educated on substance use, strength-based, using peer supports to help this process. When you work with different systems, they have the same, I call it the unconscious stigma, the unconscious bias with substance use disorders. And so what we're doing is sort of shining, we're hoping to come on radio shows like this saying, look, this is your mother's, your sister's, your nephew, your niece's, this isn't somebody else's problem. These are the people we love. And we want to say, look, this is going to be healed through connection, through relationship, through purpose, through meaning, through all those positive things. And that comes through education.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, what's it going to take for the public to start understanding that people who suffer from addiction, who are caught in the throes of this illness, they're not there because of a lack of willpower. It just blows my mind that there's still so much resistance to understanding that this is a mental health disorder, that this is a disease, that there's a neurobiological phenomenon going on here. I spent some time early in the year around a neurobiologist named Dr. Daryl Inaba, and he said that when people get that craving to use, that the part of the brain, the limbic fight or flight part of the brain, as far as that part of the brain is concerned, the part of the brain is trying to keep us safe. If I don't use, I'm going to die. You know, but people think, you know, like I remember when Philip Seymour Hoffman died, mm-hmm. this actor, people said, I don't get it, man. You know, he had everything. Why did he throw it all away? And I was so glad to hear you say, use the term drug of addiction and not drug of choice. Because when they, and I'm getting on the bandwagon here, sorry, or the box or whatever it's called, but it's so hard. And I think about these women who are pregnant. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's hard enough as it is, isn't it, Marie?
Absolutely.
Without dealing with this.
Right. Yeah. And then we just add on a whole other complex layer.
Yeah.
When they have this disease.
And they needed to be, the compassion that I hear in your voice and I see in what you do is so critical. Yeah. So what are some of the kind of supports? You've talked about it a little bit. What about childcare? I mean, some of these women already have children. Are you able to help them at all as far as finding childcare? You know, when they're in this situation, is that happening?
We're not there yet, mm-hmm. but that is one of our big goals. In fact, we had a meeting about that earlier today of getting to the point where we will have on-site childcare for these women when they're engaged in our program.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we started doing, I developed a program and we started running it earlier this year. It's sort of a dual focus, but it was targeted for women directly after delivery who might be involved with social services or maybe not, but needed extra support. So in this group, moms are bringing their newborn and young infant babies to group. So we're overcoming that childcare barrier, but more importantly, we're supporting that mama baby dyad, and we're talking about things like attachment disorders. We're talking about, you know, how babies' brains develop and if they're growing up with all those things that we know increase their ACE scores, mm-hmm. parental mental illness, parental substance use, how that affects that development. Babies sort of get set up for chronic stress, fight, flight, or freeze, which then at age 13 or 14 puts them at risk for their own substance
exactly.
use. And so we're talking about how this generational pattern happens, and all the while these moms are with other moms who are also trying to stay in recovery one day at a time with babies who are fussy, with real lives, and, you know, sort of like what we all have to do, but getting that support they need and not having the barrier of not, you know, pretty traditionally substance use treatment meant you don't bring your kids with you. But you know what? When you bring your kids with you to treatment, you're going to stay, and women are going to stay engaged longer, mm-hmm. and they're going to have better outcomes.
Yeah. I was at a conference one time, and one of the presenters said that as far as he was concerned, the only way to really treat addiction was to treat it as a family, mm-hmm. to involve the whole family. And one of the places that Margaret and I work is mm-hmm. they bring family in. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they have family weekends, family events, and stuff like that. So not just purely for the benefit of education, but what else can be gained by really engaging the family as a whole in this process, Marie?
Well, you know, one of the reasons that we named Project CARA, we came up with the acronym CARA, CARA that advocates respect, resiliency, and recovery for all, is because it's not just about the mom. It is about the whole family. And so whether that be that our moms bring their partners or their parents or their grandparents with them to an OB visit so that we can help educate the family about their disease and why we're using whatever treatment plan it is we're using with them. And also we partner with Mahex Family Health Center so that other family members who are in need of treatment for this disease, whether it be opioid use disorder or alcohol use disorder or cocaine, they can go across our parking lot to the Family Health Center and get whatever medical treatment and behavioral health treatment they need also.
Wow. So let's talk about some other possible risk factors. Domestic violence. How much do you discover that domestic violence is part of the picture in these situations? And if you do, what resources do you have to support the women?
We do see a lot of violence in general, so it's not unusual for many of our women in active substance use to have relationships with partners who are also dysregulated in their nervous systems and to experiencing domestic violence. Also, a lot of the women are actively assaulted while they're using, too. So,
yeah.
Whether you're talking about Our Voice or Helpmate Shelter or services, you know, through the Family Justice Center. Those are all the places that we utilize to really sort of bring a holistic, integrated model for these women, you know. And, you know, that's our dream, is to really have, like, for perinatal substance use, if we didn't have the stigma, we would have loved, you know, the energy that happened with domestic violence. Wasn't that amazing, you know, that we have so many resources now for that. And if we could take the stigma away from the perinatal substance use piece, these are the same women.
Mm-hmm.
These women that experience domestic violence are the same women who are using substances to cope with that domestic violence.
Sure. Yeah, one of the definitions of addiction that I like, that makes sense, is ritualized compulsive comfort seeking.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Dr. Gabor Mate, who's one mm-hmm. of my heroes, says, we ask the wrong question. We ask why the addiction. We should be saying, why the pain?
Right.
Why the pain? And you've talked about that. What about transportation for people when they're in an outpatient situation? Are you able to help them all with that? Are there resources for transportation as well?
So the original grant with MAPSAP, we get set aside monies for women. So we actually have two vans, and we do transportation, getting to appointments, getting people to and from where they need to go. MAHEC is getting ready to go online to get their own peer support specialists. So they are actively working on being able to do the same for their perinatal population and getting them to obstetrical care. I think the thing to also state that Mel always likes to state is that these women are going to come in for prenatal care. That's the one appointment they're going to come to. So when they come there, if we can sell and get them motivated and get them bought into all the other stuff that will really improve their lives, let's do it then. Let's strike while the iron's hot. Let's get them where they're most likely to soak up all this and follow through and have the best outcomes. And that's when they're pregnant. Mm-hmm. And postpartum.
So you talked about community before. How important is community in this process of recovery for these women?
Huge.
I mean, that's one of those softball, we know right. the answer, but right. we need you right. to.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? I think, Denise runs our groups with Dr. Nathan Mullins, and I think one of the really amazing things to watch that process happen is that these women are coming from communities that maybe are still active in addiction or are not supportive of recovery for multiple reasons. And when, again, pregnancy can be such a bonding moment for women, that they create this new community of which they can support each other and understand where they're coming from.
And I just want to say, you know, from an evolutionary standpoint, we are programmed to be connected.
Yes, yes.
And we will connect somehow. We will connect to the needle and the heroin. We will connect to a gang. We will connect to a partner who's actively using if we have nothing else and we have no better option. That's where we could do better. How can we create safe, healthier communities? So there's more ways to feel that connection that aren't going to be so costly to them.
And how important is a positive female role model in this? And how does that happen in your program?
Also huge. And one of the ways that happens in our program is through the group that we run at MAHEC, but also the groups that Denise runs, where moms that are new to the program are in group with moms who have been in the program for a while. And so they sort of see what the other moms have accomplished.
And the other thought about that is I don't want to leave out our male supporters, right? Men, too, can be great deliverers of trauma-informed care. In fact, our male physician, Dr. Nathan Mullins, it is not uncommon for women to say, wow, that is the first time a man who works in medicine treated me with respect and dignity. And so I think it's not just the female role models, but the men too.
Well, I was wondering about that. Yeah, and another question, is there any opportunity for people to do volunteer work over there? Let's talk about that and how they can contact you.
Absolutely. We are growing rapidly, and so we welcome that. And so if people are interested in volunteering and they go to the www.mahec.net/cara, there's contact information on there, and we would love to talk with anyone who's interested in volunteering either at MAHEC or at Women's Recovery Center over off Fairview Road.
What are some of the ways that they can help out?
What do you need, Denise?
That's a tough question. You know, I certainly think a further discussion on what that would look like. I think the best thing, though, is to have lots of opportunities to be able to say, for other people to say, I support you. What can I do? We used to have people that came in and they would give our moms baby showers, you know.
Mm.
Some of these women, I had a client just the other day, she was supposed to have a baby shower and nobody showed up.
Oh.
I said, oh my gosh, I'm gonna at least take you out and get you a pink cupcake. I felt so sad. So some of these things that we take for granted as moms, you know, being able to have support, our women don't have. So
sometimes the simplest thing can make such a difference. Well, I want to thank each of you, Marie Gannon, Mel Ramage, Denise Weegar. I need to do another show just to get your name straight.
Everybody else listening is going to know it for sure.
Yes, that's right. So from Project Cara, Supporting moms expecting recovery in pregnancy with Mayhack. You're doing amazing work. Thank you so much for serving the community in this way.
Thank you for having us.
And for coming in. So appreciate it very much. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in once again to A Mindful Emergence. And join me next week for Dr. Daniel Four, Transforming the Ancestral Roots of Addiction.